Good morning, it's 7:08 and you're listening to Upfront. I'm Janine Etter. The Electoral Commission in the Democratic Republic of Congo confirmed yesterday that it was postponing the presidential election scheduled for this Sunday, December 23rd, to Sunday, December 30th, citing delays in deploying voting materials. DRC's outgoing president, Joseph Kabila, refused to leave office after his second term ended in 2016. If the presidential election happens, it would be the first democratic transfer of power since the United States, in collusion with other Western countries, overthrew Patrice Lumumba, Congo's first democratically elected prime minister in 1960 after Belgian rule. For more on the DRC elections, we speak with Kambale Musavuli, human rights activist and national spokesperson with Friends of the Congo. Welcome, Kambale.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So to give a little bit of historical context, this would be the first democratic transfer of power since the overthrow of democratically elected Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba in 1960, and he was then assassinated in 1961. Can you talk about what happened after the overthrow of Lumumba?
Yes. I mean, the challenge of the Congo has always been to have a representative government since the death of the killing of Patrice Lumumba. After the overthrow of Lumumba, the CIA installed a dictator named Mobutu for 32 years while he was in power. He ruled by definitely an iron fist, pilfering Congo's wealth, putting state coffers to put in his personal bank account, and brought the country down to misery. But the removal of Mobutu was not a Congolese mobilization, actually, to take place. In order for him to be removed, the United States again engaged by using Rwanda, Uganda to topple the regime of Mobutu in 1997. And after the removal of Mobutu, Congo has descended to wars up until now that has taken the lives of millions of Congolese. But the context of the election that we're facing right now is that the president of the Congo has been in power since 2001. He ascended to power after the assassination of Laurent Kabila. So Joseph Kabila being in power for almost 18 years, having had also two terms, a five-year term, that's been added to his presidency, has completely refused to organize elections since the election was supposed to take place on December 19, 2016. So to hear the Electoral Commission today states that they would like to delay the election for seven more days for the election to take place on December 30th. The Congolese people are not waiting for another delay of elections. The current government has shown already the unwillingness of organizing elections. And even if elections take place, it is clear it's not going to be free and fair election. More than likely, the result that will be announced will not be the aspiration of the Congolese people. So we do know that the struggle for now will be the people versus the state, where the people would like to see their will, their aspirations be reflected in an election, while the state, via Kabila, would like to maintain power beyond the constitutional mandate that they have.
The Electoral Commission is stating that it's the reason why it's being delayed is because of problems with voting machines. Some were destroyed in a fire in the capital, in Kinshasa, last week.
Yes, indeed. That's a statement from them. But what we should continue to challenge the Electoral Commission on is, why is it possible that after 7 years, they are not able to organize elections? That's the fundamental question. Not that there was a fire for the electoral machines, which are electronic devices with a screen, where in part of Congo, many people have never touched that. So we also know, even for those machines that supposedly were burned in the depot where they kept it, will also cause questioning around the results. Will people know how to vote with these machines? South Korea, as a government, already denounced the South Korean company that made those electoral machines. I mean, we can go on and explain some of the challenges of the CENI, but after 7 years, if the Electoral Commission is unable to organize elections, I think they should all step down and allow the Congolese people to choose their leader and go through a transition if needed, to organize election with the current regime being out of power.
And when you say the CENI, that's referring to the Electoral Commission.
That is correct.
Right. So how many times have the elections been postponed after Kabila's presidency ended in 2016?
I do not have the exact count, but in 2016, on December 19, 2016, that was the end of Kabila's term, or the 20th election was supposed to take place. During that period, elections were delayed over and over. You know, it was supposed to take place in October, in November, December, and next thing we know, they said that the election would take place in 2017, in December of 2017. At the end of 2017, we had another announcement that they are not able to organize it due to logistical challenges. They would like to organize it in 2018. Now in 2018, this week, Congolese mobilized across the country. I expected to vote this December 23rd. And yesterday, they received another announcement that the elections are being delayed. So we know already the context, but the larger story, which is actually the most critical story, is the mobilization of the Congolese people. If you have seen the photos and the videos of the Congolese people in the different campaign rally with the opposition leaders, it is quite clear that the Congolese people are ready for change. They are ready for new leadership. Unfortunately, also during those campaign rallies, Congolese have been affected. The state's security forces have actually shot at some of the Congolese participating there. According to Human Rights Watch, at least in the past 2 weeks, about 7 people were killed in the campaign rallies, and scores were shot and wounded. So we are now in a situation where we know this Sunday, the Congolese people will expect an election. If it does not happen, there will be protests across the Congo, but they will face security forces. That's why it's critical to cover the Congo, to shine light on the issue, to let the world know that the Congolese people are rising up to have a new beginning. After 2 decades of war and conflict, millions of Congolese who have lost their lives, their wealth to the extractive industry, the minerals of Congo have been pilfered. They say they want to take their destiny into their own hands and have a new beginning in the heart of Africa.
And those 7 people that were shot, those all happened in the capital, Kinshasa. Is that correct?
It happened in Lubumbashi and Kinshasa, in some of the campaign rallies of the opposition. Of course, the Congolese government has denied those allegations, but there are no more allegations because Human Rights Watch has documented, even with photos of those who have been victim of the assault by the security forces. And that's been a tactic for the past 2 years. I mean, remember, the reason why we're talking about the election is not because Kabila wants to organize election. It's because the Congolese people have put pressure on this government to organize it, because they already saw signs in 2015 and 2016 there was no willingness to do that. But they have paid a huge price. I mean, we have marchers like Rossi Mukendi Chimanga, a young Congolese who was trying to protect churchgoers who were ready to go to a rally to demand the respect of the Congolese constitution. The Congolese constitution does not allow Kabila to stay beyond his presidential term. It's two term limits. But as he was protecting the people at the church as the police was coming, he was shot dead and killed. You know, we have another young Congolese woman, Therese Kabagala. She also was participating in a campaign, in a protest for the Congolese government to respect the Congolese constitution. She was killed. So I can name many Congolese. Luke Kulula, who was burned inside of his house in Goma, a young man, was a member of a youth movement in the Congo, and so many more. They lost their lives because they believe that the Congolese constitution has to be respected, that the president of the Congo cannot be above the law, that he should step down and allow a new leadership to happen. So that pressure is what's bringing us to today. And that's why I say that's the larger story. But as the Congolese people continue to put pressure on the government, use whatever means that they have to civil disobedience, right, which is their constitutional right. The Congolese constitution says that every Congolese has the right to bring down any forces, a group of people, an individual who are violating the Congolese constitution for their interest. So what they're doing, they're coming out in these rallies and the protest. They're facing, unfortunately, state security forces who shoot with their live bullets. And the world is silent. The African Union is silent. European Union, Western nations are completely silent around the violence that's afflicted on the Congolese people. But I am confident that this December 23rd will be a new day. It will be another testimony of Congolese people's courage. It will be also a message to the world where the Congolese people are continuing to insist. After 2 decades of war, they want a new beginning. They want a new leader, not a puppet leader that serves the interests of Western nation, but the leader who serves the interests of the Congolese people, so we can have the Congo that should be one. A Congo where Congo's resources benefit the Congolese people.
And can you talk about
peace in the heart of Africa?
Mm-hmm. And can you talk about the presidential candidates who are favored by the people and who are running in general?
Yeah, that's a very tough question you're asking me. But at the moment, about 11 presidential candidates are running. Kabila has chosen his cousin to run on behalf of the majority coalition, Emmanuel Shadary. This person actually is under European Union sanctions for crimes committed in the Kasai region. I don't know if you know, a year or so ago, hundreds of thousands of people were displaced, thousands more were killed, and about 100 mass graves were found in the Kasai. Emmanuel Shadary, a presidential candidate, is implicated for that, and right now is the chosen candidate for Kabila. On the part of the opposition, the top two contenders are Martin Fayulu and Felix Tshisekedi. Martin Fayulu is a long-time businessman. He worked for ExxonMobil. But he's been in the political scene since 2008-2009. And then Felix Tshisekedi is the son of the late Etienne Tshisekedi, who was a long-time opposition leader in the Congo, who passed away last year. With these two top contenders, it is visibly clear that the Congolese people in mass are supporting Martin Fayulu. But whenever they're coming up in thousands in these campaign rallies of Martin Fayulu, they're not coming and saying that they believe he's the best leader for the Congo. But at least they believe that if Martin Fayulu is the president of the Congo, he will serve the interests of the Congolese people. But with the opposition, there have been challenges whereby in the campaign rallies have been attacked by state security forces, as I mentioned. And just this week, one of the stops of Martin Fayulu was the capital city of Kinshasa. He was supposed to hold a rally there 2 days ago. The governor of Kinshasa put out an official government statement making it illegal to have any more campaign rallies until elections. That's actually an illegal statement, an illegal order that the government actually put out, and they stopped his rally. So he could not hold any rally in Kinshasa while it is a constitutional right to do so. So we're seeing that the opposition, in the process of even campaigning, they continue to face the state every step of the way, stopping them. And that's why I'm saying forcefully, even if elections take place, the problem that we will face is that the results, because of what has unfolded during the electoral campaign, the results will not reflect the will and the aspiration of the Congolese people. And all the Congolese people have now left to do is to take their destiny into their own hand and transform the country beyond just the ballot.
And that governor that you mentioned, Andre Kimbuta, who shut down the campaigning, and he's also part of Kabila's ruling party, he said that he originally said he was shutting it down due to safety concerns.
What safety concern exists when you have people coming to campaign rallies? I mean, if we have to talk about safety concern, we have to look at what's happening in Beni. We have yet seen the Congolese government stop the killing and maiming of the people of Beni. For the past 2 to 3 years, people are butchered there every day. We have not seen that type of action also with the Kasai region, where we have found 100 mass graves. Why is the Congolese government not provide security for the Congolese citizen in different area. But when it comes to a campaign rally where an opposition leader will come and speak to the people, there are now security issues. So it's very clear it's really an attempt to stop the momentum. I don't think they expected the Congolese people to take on to this process. I think they believe that after 2 years of elections being delayed, the people will not come in mass in support of the opposition. But seeing the numbers, hearing the chants, what the people are singing in those rallies, I think it has scared the regime. And they're trying to do everything in their power to stop the current movement of the people trying to transform the country.
And so what happens on this Sunday, December 23rd?
I'm only hoping for the best. I'm only hoping that people are not harmed and that the people are able to exercise their constitutional right. What's predictable is that this Sunday, people will be in the streets. I just received a video last night of Congolese who were standing in front of the Electoral Commission office. Two young Congolese, one of them was crying, and a reporter asked him, "Why are you crying?" And in tears, he said, "I'm crying, and many more Congolese are crying at this time because they want to see something new in their country." And then the friend right beside him literally sat in front of the police and urged the police officer to shoot him dead. Hearing that and watching the video gave me a sense of the anger of the Congolese people, that for as they've been wanting to see change, a group of people, a small minority of people, are latching onto power. You know, the Kabila regime is on an offensive. While they're oppressing the people on the ground, they hire an Israeli lobby firm called Mer Security to lobby the U.S. government. So they are lobbying the U.S. government right now, whereby they even had Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, and also the personal attorney to Trump, invited to a meeting where they were discussing Congo's cobalt and access to Congo's cobalt. And the Congolese ambassador stated in an interview that he gave to the New York Times that Rudy Giuliani was helping the Congolese government to avoid sanctions from the Trump administration. So we see the outside interference of making sure that Kabila stays in power. We see the internal challenges of the Congolese where they're facing security forces, but that will not deter the Congolese from coming out on Sunday. They want a new change, they will come out, and our role at least on the outside is to lift up the courage of the Congolese, share with the world that the Congolese are very clear about the future and destiny of the country, put pressure on governments who are continuing to support the Kabila regime, such as the United States government at the moment, and also putting pressure on the African Union to not remain silent when they see another African country, the second largest African country by size, the fourth largest by population, with so much wealth, the African Union remain silent. Shining light on the issue will definitely help have a better and peaceful outcome to Sunday. But what's clear, the people will be in the streets for the world to hear their voice.
And can you talk about how the neighboring countries are reacting to this, Rwanda in particular?
Yes, I mean, Rwanda has been quiet around what's happening, and it's kind of worrisome. There was reports that Rwanda's soldiers about 2 weeks ago were killed at the border. So it's unclear where they will fall in it. But when we look at Rwanda and Uganda, they are in the same position as the Congo. Kabila is trying to stay in power beyond constitutional term. The president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, has changed the Rwandan constitution so that he could stay in power until 2032. The president of Uganda has been in power since 1987, right, up until today, and continue to have support of the United States and other Western nations. So when you look at Rwanda, look at Uganda, look at the Congo, it's a trend of these authoritarian regimes having backing from the West, and staying beyond the constitutional term. But there is a very interesting development in the SADC region, the Southern African Development Community, which Congo is part of. Within SADC, Angola, which is a country that borders the Congo in the south, has been very vocal around the situation in the Congo. They've been worried because anytime there is a conflict in DRC, they end up receiving the refugees. So the president of Angola, Lourenco, have said it clearly that he would like to see election happen in the Congo and for Kabila to step down. But when you look also at Namibia, the president of Namibia, Masisi, actually said very clearly that he would like Kabila to step down and for elections to take place. The South African government has been interesting, where they have not been very clear or very staunch on sharing their positions. They are saying that they're hoping to have a free and fair elections. They will send the electoral observers, and the head of the Electoral Commission, Nanga, was just in South Africa to pick up ballots a week before the elections. So that just shows you that how can South Africa continue to work with a government that's trying to have a rigged election. But so within the region, we can look at Namibia and we can look at Angola as countries who are playing a role in putting pressure on Kabila. But in the final analysis, while we will have those outside pressure and people who are the side of the Congolese people on the ground are determined to hit the streets and transform. And shining the light on that also will help. And also presenting that in the region, we have Angola and Namibia who are also pressuring the Congolese government to have a free and fair election.
Okay, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Kambale Musavuli, human rights activist, student coordinator, and national spokesperson with Friends of the Congo, speaking about the upcoming elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you for my craft.